The Guardian.
Money can't buy happiness, still I'd rather be rich.
Rather be rich,
rather be sitting on my money bags than be digging a ditch, pulling a switch. You can enjoy the stars above, whether you are loaded or you're poor. And you'd prefer, I'm sure, the view of the heaven you got out on a yacht.
Thanks a lot.
Money can't buy love for you, still I'd rather be rich.
Rather be rich.
After all, millionaires are marrying every day. Well,
if there's a quote that best expresses the unacceptable face of New Labour, it's the one about being intensely relaxed about people getting filthy rich. Peter Mandelson, who said it, rarely misspoke. And he meant then to emphasise the contrast with the Labour Party he had first fought, the Labour of the 1970s and the 1980s, which wanted the rich to howl with anguish. Less well quoted, though, is the final part of his sentence, as long as they pay their taxes. The question of what the rich owe society is now a pressing one for the coalition. People are angry that those who are perceived to have damaged the economy are shirking their duties when it comes to repairing it. I'm in Berkeley Square, in Mayfair, central London. It's still as full of bright young things as it was in the 1920s, only these ones make money as well as spending it. It's the home of the capital's hedge fund industry, a place where high rollers glued to their trading screens move millions of pounds around in a game of chance that mirrors those in the nearby Park Lane casinos. On this prime spot on the monopoly board, it's clear that austerity has not yet taken a toll. Luxury brands are booming, and there's much evidence in the boutiques round here.
I'd rather be rich.
So, Rodney Turner, tell me how business is going.
Well, business in Berkeley Square for Rolls-Royce is absolutely amazing. We're dealing with the world's super-rich. These are the people who are arriving here in this country and who are actually fueling the high property prices. We deal a lot with the estate agents themselves and St. James pitch dealers. All the top-end people we deal with and know are all doing extremely well from this very same group of people. They are a very small minority, but their spending power is awesome.
So you're saying your clients are both the super rich and the people who, as it were, serve the super rich?
Well, yes. I mean, you could say both in that sense. I think the wealth structure around the world is so great now, and all the new countries we're dealing with, the Far East and everything else. Years ago, Saudi and Russia were very big for us, and all these new emerging countries are absolutely fantastic. So we are gaining a lot of new business.
What does it cost to drive one of your motors out of your showroom?
Well, the Ghost, which is the new model now, is looking at about £225,000, which is a start-off figure. You can spend more. You can go up to about £300,000. The top-of-the-range Phantom we sell now with most things on could be £500,000.
And how many would you expect to sell in a year?
Well, this year we're currently looking to be selling out of Berkeley Square about 150 new Rolls-Royces, plus previously owned Rolls-Royces as well, so quite a few cars.
That's quite amazing, isn't it? Well, I'm in the heart of hedge fund land here in Mayfair, and we're standing outside the posh offices of Podgson and Davis, a window full of luxury briefcases and quite noisily checked tailored jackets. Let's go in and see how business is for them. Tell me who you are.
Craig Pogson. Pogson and Davis.
What would it cost to kit me out in a smart suit?
£2,500 minimum plus VAT.
And how's business?
We're a growing business, so we've done very well.
And are your clients from around here? Are they the hedge fund and?
Yes, definitely around here, but stretching the globe.
What's the most anyone's ever spent on clothes here?
Hundreds of thousands of pounds.
So we're in Jeroboam's, the fine wine merchants.
Yeah.
And how's business?
July was twice as busy as last year, so it's very difficult to see what's happening, really.
How about your Notting Hill branch? Is the Notting Hill set feeling the pinch?
The Holland Park branch, where I worked before, which does food as well, not at all. Very, very busy. Again, it's much busier every month than last year there.
And what sort of money do people spend on bottles of champagne?
In this store, they can spend anything from our house champagne, which is £20, up to £400 or £500 on the same day, and it will come in waves of people buying one, two bottles, and then someone will come in and buy 20 cases of £100 wine. So it's very difficult to tell.
But do you get the impression that people who've just sealed the deal kind of pop in for a couple of £500 bottles of champagne?
Yeah, that sort of thing around here, definitely.
If you can afford it, London offers almost unlimited ways to spend lavishly on the finer things in life, or at least the more expensive ones. It's a great place to be rich.
Before his stroke, his father had railed against hedge funds, apparently unaware that hedge funds were, for a while, responsible for a 60% growth in their clients' portfolios. That had made them a whole lot.
Justin Cartwright is an award-winning novelist whose most recent book, Other People's Money, is set in these plush surroundings in the aftermath of the banking crash.
That is a very weird thing that you could have made, you know, been party to an utter disaster which practically bankrupted the world economies, and you can get another job and you can be on a big bonus, probably only lost 6 months' pay in the whole procedure. You know, it is very, very strange. But it's because of the vast amounts of money that are flowing through these institutions. You know, you're talking huge amounts of money. And everybody in the financial business is taking a little rake off, and they found a way of making money when things are going down, you know, which is short selling. But yeah, I think that there's the genius out of the bottle. I mean, you know, 40 years ago, this was a funny, rather restrained country, and now it's the last thing you've described as restrained, you know. The genie isn't going to go back in the bottle, you know. It's not going to suddenly become Middle England of the 1950s and 60s.
The money's still flowing. London's still a great place, a kind of global city-state. But as of last year, the government went ahead with a plan hatched by the former Labour government to tax those on the highest incomes at 50% of everything they earn, over £150,000. Many of those who'd made fortunes in the boom years threatened to leave. 20 economists have just written to the Financial Times saying the tax is discouraging growth. And the Tories, traditionally a low-tax party, have started to wonder whether they should scrap it. The Chancellor sounds like a man just waiting for the right excuse.
I'm clear that the 50% tax rate would do lasting damage to our economy if it were to become permanent. And that is why I regard it as a temporary measure.
But George Osborne knows that the public mood is clear. All recent polls show the majority support the 50p tax on the richest. Do you think people who earn £150,000 should pay a higher rate of tax than everyone else, 50p in the pound?
I think they should, actually. I think they should. Bankers or whatever. Yeah, I think they should.
Well, I think they should. They should.
Why do you think they should?
Because they're earning all that money.
Yeah, I think so. And poorer people, less tax.
You're from Norway.
Yeah.
What's the highest rate of tax people pay on their income in Norway?
I think it's 48%.
But only 48%?
Yeah.
I think that's too high, but your question was, should they pay more? And I think 50 pence is plenty.
And do you think 50 pence is too high?
I do.
Why is that?
Why? Because it slows down the total economy.
Give me a sentence explaining why.
I can't, but thank you.
Can I just ask you whether you think that people who earn over 150,000 should earn pay 50p tax rate?
I guess they should, yeah. But I don't earn 150,000.
But what do those high earners themselves think? The British famously hate talking about money, but the High Pay Commission persuaded some to go on the record with unexpected results. As the Commission's director, Deborah Hargreaves, says, there's not yet full-scale revolt over the 50p rate.
Well, interestingly, we've done some research. We've done focus groups with top earners. Now, these aren't the very top. These are people earning between £100,000 and £200,000. Obviously, a lot, but not the very top. They say they are happy with the 50% tax rate, although they wouldn't want to see it go any higher. And interestingly, older people who've lived through the 1970s and 80s think that they're actually better off now, because obviously marginal tax rates were much higher then.
But as the political party conference season approaches, voices on the right are growing louder.
The arguments for abolishing the 50 pence tax rate are firstly theoretical, in that with a lower tax rate, people have less incentive to shelter their money, to evade and avoid tax, because at the lower rate, it's simply not worth paying the accountants or setting up the Cayman Islands dependency funds and so on. And secondly, of course, also on the theoretical side, The lower the tax rate, the more incentive there is to go out and do some more work and create more wealth and generate more jobs, because you're getting to keep more of the proceeds.
Dr. Madson Peary is president of the Adam Smith Institute, a free market think tank. Much as he'd like to see the end of the top tax rate, he's fully aware of the political obstacles to slashing taxes for the wealthy.
It's very difficult at a time of economic privation to lower the top tax rate from 50 to 40 without people saying, oh, look, the government's benefiting their rich friends. The government, first of all, I think, or other economists, have to win the theoretical argument, pointing out that if this results in the rich paying more, as it has done on every previous reduction on a similar scale, then it is the fair thing to do, because the rich should be paying a greater proportion of the total. If it results in the Treasury receiving more money, this is a good thing, because it involves other people paying less money into the Treasury.
The so-called trickle-down effect of letting the wealthy keep more of their money is well rehearsed. But Deborah Hargreaves says it lacks evidence.
The idea of trickle-down is that people will spend on services and goods and they will create jobs for other people. But actually what you find is very wealthy people tend to spend their money on assets. So they buy top-end houses, cars, yachts, that sort of thing. And they invest in investment funds. So they push up lots of general investments, such as commodity prices, and that raises the price of food for everyone else. And that's, so that's not a trickle down, that's a trickle up. And then they tend to create asset bubbles. So we've seen quite a lot of asset bubbles over the past 10 years during the boom. And that's obviously very destabilizing for the economy. So I'm not sure that you should make too much of the trickle down effect.
Right now, there is no definitive data to show whether or not the 50p tax band is netting the revenue more money. But Chris Leslie, a member of Labour's shadow Treasury team, is sceptical of such arguments. He says he's confident the tax is here to stay.
Well, I mean, the revenue that it brings in is somewhere in the order of £2.5-3 billion a year. Well, that was the reports that we had from written answers to the Treasury in the past year or so. It does bring in revenue, clearly it does. There are around about 300,000 people paying that 50p rate. That might sound like a lot, but it's only 1% of the total taxpayers. They're the incredibly richest proportion of the taxpaying population. And so I'd be very surprised if it didn't bring in revenue. It was interesting that the Chancellor is suggesting that, but he's saying that he wants Treasury officials to look at it again. Well, I think if he's going to do this, he needs to do it independently, and he ought to ask the Office for Budget Responsibility to do it, because he set up an independent organisation so that nobody would be in any doubt about political interference. Well, this is a classic case where if he's trying to write his own script, he ought to at least take the opportunity of getting some independent assessment about that 50p rate. But I think it's pretty clear. It's a fair tax change. It was the right move to take when it was, and as far as we're concerned, it should stay in place for the foreseeable future. I mean, my view is that George Osborne is flying this particular kite as a way of saying to the right wing on the Tory backbenches that he is a potential future leader. I think it's probably a sort of political device rather than anything that is related to the detailed tax policy needs of Her Majesty's Treasury.
The real question is whether those who ought to actually do cough up. Even that figurehead of free market capitalism, Adam Smith, saw responsibilities for those with great riches.
It is not very unreasonable that the rich should contribute to the public expense, not only in proportion to their revenue, but something more than in that proportion.
That was from his most famous work, The Wealth of Nations. Here's Madson Peary, director of the think tank, which bears Adam Smith's name.
I think it's very important that wealthy people should be engaged within society, should accept their responsibilities. I don't think it's a good thing if our tax structure encourages them all to go off to Monaco or the Cayman Islands or wherever and live on luxury yachts. I think that's very, shall I say, inappropriate use of resources. I'd much rather see those resources used to generate economic growth in the nation, to create a better world for our children than we have ourselves. So I'm not in favour of the wealthy being detached from society at all. No, I'm very much with Adam Smith. They should be a part of it.
But even squirreling money offshore is now coming under closer scrutiny. British authorities have done a deal with the Swiss. In theory, it means billions of pounds returning to these shores from previously untaxed anonymous accounts. But the loopholes are big enough to let through a horse-drawn sleigh. There's no requirement to end the secrecy of the accounts, and that means there's no real break on illegal tax evasion. Nicholas Shackson, author of Treasure Islands, an expose of tax havens, is far from impressed.
I think this is an absolutely disgraceful deal. It's a shabby, money-grubbing deal that rewards criminality. First of all, there's the principle, the whole principle of the thing. These are, you know, people who have been criminally evading taxes are being given blanket security. They're being allowed to keep their secrecy. They're not being punished. And they're also being allowed to get a slightly lower rate of tax than ordinary mortals. So you really do have, you know, this really is a case of one set of rules for kind of criminalized elites and another set of rules for everybody else. And I think that, you know, at a time of the UK, you know, the UK riots has created a lot of soul searching, a lot of talk about moral collapse and moral depravity, and both in all parts of the different spectrums of society. And I think this is just sends a terrible signal at this particular time. It basically reinforces the message that there is this kind of, you know, as I said, one set of rules for the wealthy, another set of rules for the rest of us. So it's an absolutely reprehensible deal, and it's frightening to think that other countries have been looking at these deals and wondering whether they're going to do them as well. It's possible that the UK will consider doing similar deals with other tax havens. And it's, you know, this is Switzerland. This is a great victory for Switzerland over the UK.
Labour's Chris Leslie doesn't think much either.
Well, I think we've got to look at the details of it. I mean, superficially, one would have to welcome any extra revenue that can be gained for the Treasury, but there are some serious questions that need to be asked about it. For example, if there is some sort of amnesty for people who've evaded taxes illegally in a criminal way, are we going to be letting them off to pay a smaller one-off payment rather than face the tougher penalty that they might have levied on them by the courts? That surely wouldn't be right, and I think the Chancellor needs to say that isn't actually going to be allowed to happen. They also announced a number of changes about that it didn't apply to non-DOMs. Remember the famous issue about the non-DOMs? So we'll have to see what's going on there. So there's a lot of details still not been clarified. I'm quite sceptical about the deal that's been done, basically.
But those who really don't want to pay their taxes do pay a high personal cost.
It's an incredibly sad thing for someone to decide that they're going to move to another country, uproot their family, put their children in new schools, just for reasons of saving tax. It's you know, there are quite a few people who do it, and they can save, you know, if they're billionaires, they'll save huge, huge amounts of money by moving to another jurisdiction. It could be Switzerland, it could be Monaco, wherever. It could be the UK, as a UK treats non-domicile taxpayers from elsewhere who come from elsewhere like that. They allow them to escape tax on their non-UK income. So there are all these tax havens around the world that do create a sort of welcoming tax environment for these places. But there are a few of them where the actual quality of life is worth it. I think London is quite a draw. A lot of people like living in London. Switzerland is palatable for many people. I live in Switzerland, and there are some very wealthy individuals here who have moved purely for tax reasons. And I think it's a very, very sad thing. I should hasten to add, I'm not here for tax reasons at all. I'm here because my partner is a journalist, and she was offered this job in Switzerland. And I was writing my book Treasure Islands about tax havens when this offer came in, and I decided that Switzerland would be a very good place to be.
The art of taxation consists in so plucking the goose as to obtain the largest possible amount of feathers with the smallest possible amount of hissing. So said the 17th century French economist Jean-Baptiste Colbert. But what hissing there has been recently has come from some of the world's highest paid figures, not complaining that the rich are taxed too much, but paradoxically, that they're taxed too little. The billionaire financier Warren Buffett wrote an open letter to President Obama setting out his long-held view that the rich should pay more.
we're going to have to get more money from somebody. Now, the question is, do we get more money from the person that's going to serve me lunch today, or do we get it from me? I think we should get it from me. And I have a lower tax rate, counting payroll taxes, than anybody in my office, and I don't have a tax shelter. I just follow the, I just go take the form and fill out the numbers. And I think that's very wrong. And I think that if we're going to get money, and we're going to need money, I mean, we are not taking in enough money at the federal government level.
Similar pleas have been heard recently from wealthy figures in France and Germany, but nothing yet from Britain's super rich. Fayeza Shaheen works for the New Economics Foundation think tank, and she's been researching inequality.
When the rich can afford their own healthcare, their own education, they can live in different neighbourhoods, that can be corrosive to the social fabric because they no longer mix with any other one else. And when the poor, when the same happens at the other end, which we do see happening, you know, that the poor are more spatially segregated and clustered, there's no longer that mix, there's no longer that understanding. And actually, this is perhaps one of the reasons why we don't see in the UK, you know, our top CEOs and the richest people coming out and writing letters to our Prime Minister to say, you know, we want to give something more. It's because they don't understand. And you can see that in the way that the attitudes towards the rioters were very polarised, the sense that these are, you know, lazy, feral young people, and that's a sense of not actually understanding the social and economic context in which they grow up.
She draws on recent academic work that suggests that everyone's happier living in a more equal society.
There's so much evidence to suggest that over a certain amount of income, usually around 50k, your well-being doesn't increase by that much. And actually, you know, you could be as happy, and that should be the ultimate aim, without having hundreds of thousands of pounds more. And there's a way of redistributing that money so that, that we can, you know, if everyone is happier, then, you know, we'll all be living in a nicer society. But unless there is a real U-turn on the way that the government is talking about inequality and our political elite is talking about inequality, we can't start making those steps. And really, they need to be saying why it's corrosive. They need to be highlighting the evidence. They need to be looking at countries where it is more equal, like Scandinavia, and really being positive about some of the outcomes that you see there around, you know, better education, better health for all, including the rich.
Neither the arguments of the spirit level nor Warren Buffett's plea for more tax have convinced Madsen Piri of the Adam Smith Institute.
If Warren Buffett takes the view that the United States government can spend his money more wisely, morally, than he can, I, for one, would be astounded. I much prefer the example of Bill Gates. Not a man I admire in many other respects, but I think he's earned his key to Heaven's Gate by the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation, where he takes the view that spending money for charitable purposes, notably the conquest of malaria, provision of clean water for developing countries and so on, this, I think, is an entirely more worthwhile expenditure of his funds than government would make of it. We have all seen the massive waste that takes place when government spends our money. I'd much rather see wealthy people devote their money to philanthropic purposes and see vastly more benefits than would come if government took it.
For all the intellectual arguments on both sides, political judgment tends to owe more to the popular mood. And at the moment, that is turning on the wealthy. Whatever the Tory faithful say, in crude terms, the message is, you, the rich, broke the economy, you, the rich, can pay for it. And with economic growth well below what the government needs to hit its deficit-cutting targets, the money has to come from somewhere. These debates will run right through the party conference season and beyond. The Guardian's Tom Clark is here with me now to explain how this debate of what some are calling the undeserving rich is going to develop. Tom, starting with the Liberal Democrats, are they going to flesh out their mansion tax plans, do you expect?
Well, Vince Cable, the great darling of the Lib Dem conference, was of course the fellow who a few years ago now said that the Liberal Democrats shouldn't be interested so much in increasing the top rates of income tax, but should instead look at taxing wealth. Most famously, he talked about a mansion tax, which proved very controversial, but also some pretty strict rules around taxing pensions and taxing capital gains. Now, it is therefore conceivable that Vince Cable, and with him a lot of the where he goes, a lot of the Lib Dems will follow, would be prepared to countenance a change in the top rate of tax, but only if he could get a higher tax on wealth, which would be equally controversial.
What about Labour? Obviously, they'll want to defend their tax, the 50p rate, but I wonder whether there's a growth strategy that they'll start to articulate that also has a tax element.
Well, Labour... it's clear in the sense that Labour's not going to say let's abolish the 50% rate now, but Labour is very divided on whether this is a temporary expediency to help pay for the credit crunch, or whether instead, as Ed Miliband used to suggest, this is something which is an important marker of saying that we expect the rich to pay their fair share. In other words, it should stay. And you'll get some of that debate, I think, at Labour conference, but they're very... rightly alarmed about being seen as the people who only ever want to increase tax at a time when families are feeling the pinch. So I think if you do hear some tough talk on 50p, it's likely to be coupled to some goodies for the rest of the population in terms of lower VAT, for example. The question in the electorate's mind is going to be whether the sums add up.
There's going to be huge pressure on David Cameron, and particularly on George Osborne, to commit to getting rid of the 50p rate. Can they resist it? Will they want to?
Well, George Osborne ideologically doesn't want to hold out. He believes that entrepreneurs get paid a lot of money for making a lot of wealth, and that's how you turn the wheels of capitalism. So he really does want to get rid of the 50p rate and thinks it would stimulate growth, whether rightly or wrongly. But he's also as much an economist as a... Sorry, as much a politician as he is an economist, of course. And I think that... he recognises that it's not going to be a very popular thing to do. And there are stories in the press already saying that David Cameron is very, very cautious about the idea that this can be quickly got rid of. And I think for George Osborne in particular, because this is a coalition, he recognises probably that the Liberal Democrats would only sign off on it in the event that they could get one of these wealth taxes. Well, let's imagine it's a mansion tax. That's going to be pretty unpopular with those core Tory voters. George Osborne already at war with lots of Tory homeowners over wanting to build new houses in green bits of England. Is he really going to send the tax man round to their nice houses as well? I think that would be an even more dangerous place to be than taxing the bankers heavily.
Well, Tom Clark is back next week as we resume normal service on Politics Weekly. I'm Anne Perkins. The producer was Phil Maynard. Thanks for listening. Oh, you got to make do with what you got.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.